Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Huntsman by Cambria Hebert, narrated by Alexa Elmy and Preston Gear. Prologue. Villain. Somewhere in Asia.
The past is calling.
The unmistakable light of amusement in my assistant's eyes faded and snuffed out completely when I lifted my eyes, shifting deeper into the high-backed wing chair behind my desk. Excuse me. Clearing his throat, gaze lowered to the expensive hand-woven rug stretching nearly wall to wall over the glossy, meticulously laid dark wood floors. He spoke loud enough to project his next sentence to me, even though his chin remained downcast.
You have a call? From America.
Interest piqued with suspicion, I replied. We haven't dealt with anyone that far west in a long time. He made a sound of agreement. If you know that, then why would you put the call through? His tremble was visible, as was the way his Adam's apple bobbed when he swallowed.
I didn't at first.
I shouldn't have to ask for an explanation. Dark eyes snapped up. He knew I was losing patience. Clenching his hands in front of him, he nearly tripped over his words, making haste.
It's been the same call for a few weeks now. I kept hanging up, but she keeps calling back.
She?
I was curious how she could even get this number, let alone be persistent enough to call every single day.
Americans think the world revolves around them.
She says she knows someone you've been trying to find.
I tilted my head. Who?
She refused to tell me, insisting she would only speak to you.
Get out! The second I spoke, he jolted and spun, the black jacket momentarily puffing out around his slim hips. He scurried like a rat in search of food, making my upper lip curl. As if he felt the snarl, his hip caught the edge of a decorative table on his way past. The crystal vase atop it fell over with a sharp snap. The rush of water splashed over the edge, carrying with it a long-stemmed black rose. The water and the once pristine flower plopped onto the floor. With a low gasp and a sheer look of horror, the man dropped to his knees, which only amplified the mess.
I apologize,
he stammered, trying to scoop up the water with his hands. My 5-inch heels were soundless as I walked over the carpet, my presence only realized when the pointed toes stepped up to the edge of the mess he was trying to clean. All attempts to fix what he'd done ceased, and the shoulders beneath his suit jacket slumped. The way his head hung on his neck was pathetic, as though he'd already accepted his fate. Simpering, spineless. Good help was hard to find these days. The only surefire way to get the kind I need is to create it. And sometimes not even that is foolproof. That thought made the anger burning inside me hotter. Chal, I beckoned without even lifting my voice. The white paneled door opened immediately, a large man filling its frame. With a single stoic glance, he took in the employee on the floor and the mess surrounding him. I don't want to see him again. His nod was curt, And when his hand cupped under the arm of the now former employee, the acceptance of his fate crumpled and he started to whimper, dragging it out into a god-awful wail.
"Please," he keened. "I'll do anything."
Chal kept going, the man's feet dragging over the floor as he went.
"You."
Chal stopped, and the sniveling man looked up, hope blossoming over his red face. "That joke wasn't funny," I informed him. Hope shriveled, and realization dawned once more.
"I'm sorry. Give me another chance,"
he wailed as Chal hauled him away, shutting the door quietly behind him and cutting off his pathetic and useless pleas. Silence descended once more, and I bent to pick up the rose. A thorn pricked deep into my flesh, stinging me with pain and drawing forth a swell of blood. I stared down at the wounded finger and the sharp thorn, which was now smeared with red. Chuckling, I carefully placed the onyx-topped stem on the table and sucked my finger between my painted lips. Metallic, sharp, and slightly pungent, my own blood burst over my tongue. Remembering the call, I went back to my desk to lift the gleaming black phone and press a button. "Yes?" My voice was cool. "I know where he is." I did not recognize her voice, but her tone. That was something else entirely. Distinguished, powerful, petty, and most importantly, filled with revenge.
"Who?"
I faked disinterest. "The man you've spent the last 10 years searching for." The hand not holding the phone curled around the edge of my desk, squeezing until every small joint and every finger ached and burned. The back of my neck tingled, making my eyes narrow into slits. It couldn't be. "Who is this?" I demanded, power radiating from my core.
"Mirror, mirror on the wall," the woman murmured. "Who's the most powerful of them all?" Was she challenging me?
"Listen to me," I began, thinking this woman had no idea who she was playing with.
"New York City, the Grimms. I don't know what you call him. But here, he goes by Earth."
I jolted upright, my already perfect posture going so rigid it felt painful. I opened my lips to demand more, but the buzzing of the line against my ear cut me off. She'd hung up. Replacing the receiver, I stood at the side of my wooden desk, staring blindly at the deep gray walls covered in ornate wainscoting. I also didn't see the authentic Leonardo da Vinci painting that hung between the moldings, the candle sconces, or the tall leafy green tree that was potted in the corner. All the high-priced elegance of this office faded away until there was nothing in front of me but an empty street cloaked by the obscurity of night and brought alive only by thick silver-gray fog that drifted above the pavement, concealing where the ground ended and the air began. The sound of a gunshot boomed through the memory, ripping it away and knocking me back onto my butt. One high heel flipped off, landing on its side nearby, while the other dangled half on, half off my foot as I sprawled on the floor, hand clutching my chest. Pain so vivid and real tore through me.
I began tearing at the white silk jacket, ripping its oversized fit away from my body to find a blooming patch of red. "I've been shot!" I wailed. Across the room, the door shuddered open. Behind me, the paneled black bookshelves slid soundlessly in, and a man rushed out. Surrounded at once, chaos thundered throughout the room as my men filled the space. The one who'd come from the bookcase dropped to his knees beside me. "I've been shot!" I yelled. "Don't just stand there! Find the gunman!" The men all shuffled uncomfortably, and the one at my side grabbed my hands to hold them.
"There was no gunshot. The estate is secure."
Ripping my hands free, I moved to show him the blood. There was none. A broken cry ripped from my throat.
"Out!"
the man at my side roared.
"Do a perimeter search." "What happened?"
he demanded when everyone was gone. "No blood, no pain, no dark street. Just me on the floor in my office. Just me being weak." Shoving his hands off, I stood. Without the 5-inch heels, my height was insignificant, something I hated. Knowing this, he did not stand. Instead, he placed my shoes in front of me, offering one wide shoulder to use as I slid them on. Only then did he stand, his height still more than mine, but a much more tolerable difference.
"What happened?"
he repeated. "The past called." My former assistant had no idea how right that statement was. Except it wasn't because it was still yesterday in America. But it was because that brief unknown caller had managed to shove me 10 years into the past without even giving her name. But she had given a name. Could it really be? My eyes lifted. "Call Daishim. I want him here now."
1. Earth. The faint ringing of a phone tucked away in my office stilled my movements and tilted my head. It was the third time I'd heard that thing ringing today. Even though I'd retired from the business of killing, I still kept the phone. I still heard it ringing from time to time. And sometimes, I still had the urge to answer. The muffled chimes silenced, and I grunted, going back to pushing the broom over the bar floor. It wasn't even that late in the day. "Someone must really want someone dead," I muttered as I finished sweeping up the discarded peanut shells from the night before. From his bed against the wall, Snort lifted his head, the tags on his collar jangling with the movement. "What are you looking at?" I asked. Living up to his name, he gave a loud snort and then rolled onto his side. I didn't ever advertise my career as an assassin. Doing so would make me shitty at what I did. In fact, just getting my phone number took a lot of work, especially because I changed it often. Finished with the cleanup, I went to the back to grab a few cases of beer to stock behind the bar for when we opened later tonight. The Rotten Apple didn't open until late afternoon and closed when the last person left, or when I was fed up with them all and kicked them out. The sound of clinking bottles was interrupted by more ringing. Stiffening inside the cooler, I drew up, equal parts in awe and annoyed at this asshole's persistence. But then I realized the ringing was much louder than before, and it wasn't the phone hidden away in my office, but my actual cell phone lying on the bar. I sneered at the irritating thing, but then leaned over to see who it was. It could be Fletcher. He might need something. And before you go joining in with the rest of my family, saying I had a soft spot for my baby brother, you're wrong. I just worried about him, is all. It wasn't Fletch, but I did a double take when I saw who it was. Neo. My eyes widened in shock. I mean, sure, he was family, but the rift between us meant barely ever seeing that name flash on my screen. What's wrong? I spat into the line the second I accepted the call. Even if I was concerned, I wouldn't show it. The brief pause on the other side was filled with a lot of background noise that did not sound like the city I was familiar with. Why would something be wrong? Neo retorted. Because you're calling. I need a favor. I barked a laugh, the sound harsh. I didn't have to say told you so for him to know that was exactly what I was thinking. Once upon a time, we were so close, words weren't always needed. Never mind, Neo muttered, and I could practically see him pulling the phone away from his ear.
Neo, think about Virginia.
Ivory's voice echoed through the line. My brows drew together, my fingers tightening on the phone. Virginia? I asked. Is something wrong with your sister? The sound of some kind of announcement echoed loudly in the background. Where is he? Neo, I demanded. His voice came back on the line, loud and clear. I went to California with Ivory for a business thing. We were supposed to be back by now. All of the background noise suddenly made sense. He was at an airport. Where are you? Texas. There's some freak storm, and all the flights have been grounded. We'd hoped to be on a plane by now, but it's not looking good. We might not get out of here until tomorrow. What's that have to do with Virginia? I asked. She has an appointment later this afternoon with a specialist. We can't really cancel, because these appointments are set up months in advance. Okay, I said, not really understanding his point. I want you to take her in my place. Jolting upright, I pulled the phone away from my ear to stare at it. What? My voice was incredulous. I thought you forbade me to go near her. I did, but I'm not as pissed at you as before. And what? I pressed when he faltered. I know you won't let anyone mess with her. I felt my upper lip curl. I guess it's convenient to have someone like me around sometimes. Ivory gasped.
That's not true.
Did she have her ear pressed to the phone? Ever since I'd heard the name Ivory White, my life began to unravel. She was nosy, bossy, and impossible to kill. And now, she was family. Her voice was muffled, like she'd pulled back to scold Neo.
Tell him that's not true.
She was also far more forgiving than my brother. Neo grunted. After the meeting with the doctor, she's seeing a new physical therapist. You gotta watch them. Some of them get handsy. My back teeth snapped together. I couldn't even muster up surprise, because I knew damn well that there were more people in the world who took advantage of others than not. But the idea of anyone doing that to Virginia made fire singe my belly. I know we aren't back to where we used to be. Yet. But this is my sister, and I can't be there. I know you will protect her. I was silent for a few beats, digesting everything he said and trying to settle all the emotion churning inside me. Truth was, the rift between Neo and me bothered me. I didn't like it. I also didn't like that I didn't like it. This was a chance to make it up to him, an opportunity to gain back some of the trust I'd broken. Where and what time? Neo's exhale sounded like wind blowing straight through the phone. I'll text you the address. You'll need to pick her up soon. It takes a little longer when traveling with... I grunted, cutting him off. I get it. I'm not sure you do. The words were spoken softly, almost as if they weren't meant for my ears. The underlying pain in them was audible, but I didn't feel bad for Neo. Still, I heard myself saying, don't worry about her. I'll make sure she's okay. Thanks. I pulled the phone away from my ear, but hearing him call my name brought it back up. What? I didn't call you because it was convenient. If anything, calling someone else would have been a hell of a lot easier. My eyes focused on the large sign hanging behind the bar. Poisoning guaranteed. Then why didn't you? Because I trust you with her safety. Don't make me regret it. The call disconnected, and I held the phone up until it vibrated in my hand, signaling the text he'd promised to send. Noting the time and location of the appointment, I glanced at the clock and went to change. I'd been waiting a long time to rebuild my relationship with my brother, and finally, finally, he was giving me a chance.
2. Virginia. The familiar scent of nail polish wafted up as I stroked the short, paint-covered brush over my toenail. A sunny shade of yellow was left in its wake as I went back again with another long stroke, to add even more of the shiny color. As I leaned over in concentration, my long hair slipped over my shoulder, pooling in my lap. I pushed the brush back into the small square bottle, carefully swiping it before bending back to my toes. Just as I placed the brush on my nail, my foot slipped off the side of the bed where I'd propped it and fell like dead weight toward the floor. I giggled, bending again at the waist to stare at my foot, which was adorned with a long stripe of yellow polish all the way up my toe. Maybe I'll start a new trend, I mused, glancing over to the small lit-up glass cage where Zilla lived. Hearing my voice, the leopard gecko turned her head to glance in my direction. What do you think, Zilla? Perhaps I should just add some brown dots and then we can match. She stared another moment longer, then went into the little tent at the side of her cage. I'll take that as a yes, I called after her. Setting aside the polish, I lifted my fallen leg, propping it up on the side of my bed once more. The quilt I used was colorful and patterned, so if I accidentally got a little polish on it now and then, no one would even notice. Giving my legs a tap, I made sure they were steady and went back to finishing my task. Soon, all 10 toenails were glossy and yellow, and radiating warmth just like the sun. I imagined how it would feel to wiggle them under the summer rays outside, and maybe even how it would feel to burrow them into heated sand on the beach. My cell phone lit up, a photo of my brother filling the screen. I sighed even as I reached for it. So overprotective. He was going to be here soon, but he was calling too. I didn't forget about the appointment, I said ruefully instead of just saying hello.
I'm glad, but I didn't make it back in time,
Neo replied, also foregoing a standard greeting. I gasped lightly, pushing at my hair. What? Is everything okay?
Everything's fine, he assured me. The flights all got canceled in Texas because of weather.
Oh, I said, listening to all the sounds in the background and wondering what it would be like to wander around a busy airport. Well, that's okay. I can handle this one on my own.
No.
I pursed my lips.
No? I called my bro.
A bunch of static interrupted his voice, cackling through the line. Neo?
V. The signal is
He tried to say something else, but all I heard was more static and his frustration. Listen, I said loud into the line. Talking louder wasn't going to make a difference, but my voice rose just the same. Don't worry about me. I'll handle myself and tell you all about it later. Be safe, okay? And give my love to Ivory.
Garble, garble, garble. The call dropped.
Pulling the cell away from my ear, I stared at the screen as it went black. I debated calling him back, but there really was no point. Tossing my phone into my lap, I couldn't help but feel a little tingle of excitement as I realized I would be doing something independently today.
quickly adjusting my legs so they were resting back on the footrests on my wheelchair. I rolled across the room to Zilla's cage. The special lamp that kept her warm glowed down, and inside the glass enclosure looked like a small tropical paradise. "Zill!" I exclaimed, tapping lightly on the glass. The small spotted gecko poked her head out of the tent, nose first. "Can you believe it? I get to be on my own today." She moved forward, coming right up to the glass where I was. Smiling, I reached into her warm climate and stroked her on the top of her head. "Maybe I'll even make a stop to get you some tasty crickets." Her tail swished a little at that, signaling she was as excited as me. This was the first time ever I was going to go out to an appointment or do anything alone. Neo was probably beside himself with the knowledge, but secretly, I was thrilled. No overprotective big brother watching every move I made. No one telling me to be more careful or ask me if I was okay every second. Just me out there in the city, taking care of myself. The way it was supposed to be. Zilla went back into her tent, and I wheeled over to the brightly painted dresser near my bed. Reaching into the drawer, I pulled out a long cotton maxi dress and a small white t-shirt. Even though I was in my room with the door closed, I felt awkward just stripping off my nightgown in the middle of the room. Anyone could walk in at any moment. It was just how it was when you lived in a care facility. As much as I loved the staff here, and as much of me as they'd admittedly seen of me before, I still wanted to retain some sense of privacy. Taking my clothes, I wheeled into the wide bathroom, pushing the door closed behind me. There was a floor-to-ceiling mirror propped along one wall. Neo brought it in especially for me so I could check my outfits without any trouble. And yes, he bolted it to the wall because he was terrified it would fall over on me. I tried to tell him I wasn't a toddler and I wasn't going to be climbing on it, but he insisted. Stripping off my nightgown and draping it over the back of my wheelchair, I tugged on the short-sleeved baby doll t-shirt and then the green maxi dress that had thin spaghetti straps and was patterned with white daisies with yellow centers. Maxi dresses were my favorite thing to wear. Not only were they so soft and comfy, but they were very convenient. It was a lot easier to tug that down and under my bum and legs than trying to maneuver myself into jeans. Once I had the dress worked down below my hips, I worked to adjust it until it fell over my legs. Sometimes I missed the feel of the cotton swishing against my ankles. Using the mirror, I checked to make sure that the dress definitely was on properly, pulled under my butt and covering everything it should. It was super embarrassing when one side got caught and showed things I didn't mean to show. Satisfied, I opened the bathroom door and then made my way back into my small room, smiling at the huge mural of a tower in a field of flowers that covered the largest wall. My laptop was open on my bed, a movie I'd seen 100 times playing on the screen. Reaching for a white plastic basket and my brush, I got started on my hair. Did I mention I had, like, a lot of hair? When Neo lifted me, it hung well past my butt. It was the color of wheat, a golden hue but not nearly as bright as the sun. It was thick and soft and prone to tangles. I loved it, though. The long blonde locks represented a part of me that could grow and change. A part of me that held even just a little of the sun I often missed so much. A part that could become a field of flowers or filled with waves like the ocean. Brushing through the lengthy strands was a calming ritual. And I also found it to be the most soothing memory when I needed it most. Despite the copious amounts of hair, I was very skilled with my fingers and brush. In no time, I had it brushed out and parted down the center. My nimble fingers French braiding it into 2 very long pigtails.
Once they were done, I loosened the braids a bit and set about pinning small flower clips along the plaits. When I was done, my pale gold hair was transformed.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?